Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Jennifer Harmon makes a return visit to The Final Table. She was our guest on our most downloaded podcast of all time almost a year ago, and we've invited her to come back on today. She's got a charity event in Reno in a couple of weeks that she wants to talk about. We have lots of things to talk to her about, including the new Federated Poker League, the one that's being run by Jeffrey Pollack with Annie Duke as the commissioner. They announced today what the criteria will be for that league and who the players will be. I won't be in it. Dennis won't be in it. But Jennifer Harmon has been invited to play in it, and we'll talk to her about that later on. I am Paul Harrah, sitting at the featured table at Harrah's St. Louis in the poker room where the Bad Beat jackpot is still going. Up to $229,000. I don't think anybody has hit this thing since last fall. My partner, Dennis Phillips, won't be hitting it anytime soon because he's at his new home in Las Vegas. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
How you doing, Paul?
Doing just great.
Hey, don't rule me out totally. I'm not that far from qualifying from it, and I got a couple of months to see if I can do something.
That's true.
There's several of us. Phil Locke is very close. Chris Moneymaker is close. There's a group of people. There's going to be more than the initial 218 that are invited that are going to be able to play in that league.
Well, you know what? Let's start off by talking about this because this is, you know, the newest information to come out in the world of poker today, the Federated Poker League, although I don't think they've officially decided to call it that. The company that is running it is called Federated Sports and Gaming, but they did come out today with a roster of 218 people who have qualified, all professional poker players. This is not going to be an open event. We talked to both Annie Duke and Jeffrey Pollack about it earlier this year, waiting to find out what their criteria would be. And essentially, it's pros who have done well recently or are all-timers with titles. And I can run down some of the qualifications for it here and explain that not all the poker tournaments that are played in the world qualify for this. For instance, some of the recent Eric Seidel victories, like the NBC Heads Up Championship, or some of the ones that had a limited entry pool of 18 or 20 players, they don't qualify. It has to be a tournament with a buy-in of 1,500 or more, has to be something that is open to the general public. It could be an invitational as long as the public could qualify for that in a satellite event, but otherwise seniors events and ladies events and employees events and those other things are not qualify. Also, it's got to have at least 21 players in it, so you don't get those double table shootout events qualifying for this. And then the majors would be in there, like the World Series of Poker, both in Las Vegas and in Europe, the WPT, the NAPT, the EPT, the Aussie Millions, circuit event, main events with a buy-in of 5K or more, and on and on. And then the third part of it is adjusted lifetime earnings. And this is where it kind of gets very confusing, because when they say adjusted lifetime earnings, they've adjusted it by, in many cases, capping the amount of a win that would be in there. So, for instance, Jamie Gold, who won $12 million when he took down the title in the biggest ever main event at the World Series of Poker, not eligible for this league. Neither is Chris Moneymaker. Neither is Jerry Yang or Jonathan Duhamel or Joe Catta. Right there, you got five of the main event winners from the last 8 years who do not qualify for this thing. Dennis, your thoughts on all of this?
Well, they had to come up with some way to limit it. And what they're doing is they're pushing the people that are hot right now, that are doing well in the last 3 years, and those that consistently place high in the money ones, so that a one- or a two-time high placement won't do it. Some of the others, the invitational ones, I understand why they kicked them out, but to be invited to the NBC Heads Up means you're probably one of the top pros. So if you do well there, I question a little bit about kicking that one out. Plus, some of the other events are monstrous events that are below the 1,500. this year at the World Series of Poker, they're going to have seven $1,000 events. They're going to have, or potentially have, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people in it. I think maybe if they went by prize pool or a combination thereof, it'd be a little bit better because they're eliminating some large ones. You know, I've won a couple of these Venetian Deep Stacks, and they don't count. Finished third in that NBC Heads Up, and it doesn't count. I know they have to limit it, and this is a good first stab, but I think maybe they could tweak it just a little bit more to make it a little bit better. But I'll tell you, if you look at that listing of the people that had qualified, there are some top-notch players on that list.
Yep. I will tell you that you are not alone in being kind of on the bubble here. Todd Brunson is not in there. You mentioned Phil Locke, T.J. Cloutier, Dan Harrington, Mike Sexton, Phil Galfond, and Liv Boree, and Bill Chen, and Joe Sebok, not among the names that are in here. There are three different levels for people to qualify at you get a card, which qualifies you for 2 years, and when we say qualify, that means you're in for 2 years, and they won't be looking back at your qualifications next year, assuming that there is a second year to this league. There's also a three-year card and a five-year card. Let me tell you who's getting the five-year card because of either lifetime achievement or recent achievement. Daniel Alai, Johnny Chan, David Chu, Scott Clements, Hoyt Corkins, Alan Cunningham, Roland DeWolf, Freddie Deeb, Chris Ferguson, Barry Greenstein, John Juwanda, Phil Hellmuth, Phil Ivey, Howard Lederer, Jeffrey Lissandro, Michael Mizrachi, Carlos Mortensen, Daniel Negreanu, Men Wynn, Scotty Wynn, John Fan, J.C. Tran, Vanessa Selps, Eric Seidel, and Huck Seed. Those are the ones who will not have to have their qualifications looked at for the next 5 years, and they will all qualify for this. That's a pretty impressive roster here, and as I go through here, there are quite a few names of people that I don't know, and if I don't know them, I think the casual poker fan probably doesn't know them, but I will say this. I don't think you're going to see any dead money in this field, Dennis.
No, I recognize most of the names. There's actually a couple of names in there that I don't even recognize. But the majority of these people are those that do grind it out, that do play in all the major events, that do go through the circuit. If you don't know a name on there, doesn't mean the guy's not just playing his tail off and he's playing in all of the 10K events around the country, because a lot of these guys are doing that. They're on the circuit full-time. They are professional players. They are making their mark, too. That listing, and I don't know what, there must maybe only 30 of them in there, and I'll bet there's not any more than that that are in the three-year one. The vast majority of this 218 are in the two-year one that just barely got in there.
Yep.
It's a tough criteria to make this list.
You know who qualified as a two-year player? Annie Duke.
Well, there's 217 players then.
Now, Annie has said that she's not going to play in it. That would be a little bit of a conflict of interest to be commissioner of a league in which you're playing. But she said in an interview with Oscar Garcia, who was our guest last week, the reporter from the Associated Press, he said, you know, we wanted to reward players who have won consistently and shown recent success. The decision we came up with is relevance in the tournament world today is the more important piece. Nobody should be able to get into the league if they haven't been performing in the last 3 years, which is why I guess Jamie Gold gets knocked out of there and some of the others as well. As for whether this is a business that can work, Jeffrey Pollack, who's running this company, says that Black Friday, the online poker shutdown, has not impacted their business model and hasn't impacted their launch plan. Which brings me to the next questions I have for you, Dennis, which is they're planning a series of events, the first of which will start just over 3 months from now. They'll all be at the Palms in Las Vegas, and they'll all have a $1,500 first event, which will be open to anybody, and the top nine finishers in that will qualify for that week's main event, which will be a $20,000 buy-in. Now, in the U.S. poker market, with a lot of people who had money online or a lot of pros who were getting money from PokerStars and Full Tilt Poker and Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker and Doyle's Room and on and on and on, will they be able to afford a $20,000 buy-in for five different events? That's $100,000 just to play in this series.
Two different points on that. Of the 217 people on the list, most of them are going to try to find some way to get in there. Because also Jeffrey has announced that there's going to be not dead money, but there will be a little bonus money in there. There is no rake on it, and there's going to be added money to each of these prize pools. So there's going to be a good EV value to actually get in there. If the average price to get in it is $20,000, then the average payout might end up being $25,000, you know, that type of deal. So there's a good EV value there, and they're going to try to. That being said, $100,000 with the bankrolls right now, with sponsorships in question, with all sorts of the major sites not knowing what's going on, the next 90 days could be real interesting. And there's a number of people on that list that, well, that do not have the funds and should not try to sink in that much of their bankroll to play these five events.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I mean, so, I know when you talk about EV, expected value here, you know, we are talking about rake-free events and an overlay of $400,000 in each of the main events, plus $2.6 million in added prize money overall in the first year. So there is that overlay, but again, you still have to reach into your pocket and lay out 20 dimes to get into this game if you want to play in it each and every time. And I think there are going to be a lot of people in the new world of poker who are going to have to swallow hard and make a big decision.
I think there's going to be an awful lot of people talking to sponsors and everything now. They are not going to be sponsored by the major sites. They're going to have to dig into their own pocket or find a backer of some sort. And it could get quite interesting in the next couple of 3 months to see exactly what kind of what the backing percentages do and who they're backing and who actually gets into these. There's 217 qualifying right now. There'll be 15 more, I believe you said, at the 15 or 9. That qualify for each of these in that $1,500 one. I guess it's
nine.
Only nine that qualify.
Yeah.
So there's another nine, and you're going to get another handful of them that over the next couple of months they're on the bubble and qualify. You know, if Chris Moneymaker goes deep in one of the tournaments here at the WSOP, he could probably qualify. I think Phil Locke's like $150,000 short on his cash earnings from the last couple of years, so he could easily qualify with a couple of good runs in the World Series. So there's going to be a number of other people that are. But this first field, literally, because of the shortage of money, because of the limited number of players that are qualifying for it, you might only have, you know, 100, 110 players, 120 players playing in that.
Yep.
That could actually be a very, very elite field.
The other things that we'll have to wait to hear, and maybe we can get Annie on next week's show to talk a little bit about this, I'm curious about who's bankrolling this whole thing. Where is that overlay money coming from? I know the Palms is hosting it, but they're not going to be writing $2.6 million in overlay checks.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of expense for running this, too. And if they're not taking any kind of a rake or something like that, you're going to have room. I think every player that qualifies gets airfare, hotel, and $100 a day per diem or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, there is a bonus to each and every player. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something like that. So they're getting their hotel taken care of. They're giving their food taken care of. There's nice little bonuses for this. And you're right, somebody's got a fat wallet that's going to be writing some checks here.
Do they have a TV deal for this yet?
I have not heard of one. Jeffrey has alluded to it a few different times and has said that announcement's going to be coming out before August 1st, sometime hopefully in the next like 60 days. But he said it would probably be preceded by a couple of other messages. So I think there's an awful lot that's got to still come out.
Unless he has tapped into a roster of corporations that are willing to sponsor this that he could not tap while he was the commissioner of the World Series of Poker, I think we have to wait and probably be very surprised if they do find somebody who's coughing up, as you point out, all of the expenses for this. When we talk rake-free, that means that none of the entry money is going to pay for the dealers, for the setup, for the tournament directors, for the hotel, for the rental of the equipment. You know, it takes a whole bunch of tables and chairs and decks of cards and chips and all those things. Somebody's got to be picking up the cost of that overhead.
And if you've got, you know, under 200 players, it's not going to be a huge number of tables and everything like that, but you're right. You're talking several days hotel, you're talking food, you're talking dealers, you're talking managers, you're talking the whole bit. Decorating the room, just rental of the room. I mean, it goes on and on and on. There's a huge amount of money that, say, even the Palms is willing to front that and take care of it in return for the publicity. They're not also going to, at least I can't imagine them also writing a big check to the Federation on top of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, no position to know. This is 100% guesswork. But it's like there's a lot of money flowing in there from somewhere, and it's not coming from the players.
Well, as I said, Jennifer Harmon, our guest in a few minutes, is going to be one of the people invited to play in this. We'll talk to her about it some more in just a few. Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris here at Harris St. Louis, where, by the way, I played in the monthly Tournament of Champions on Sunday, a nice 10K free roll that they offer here. I know where that 10K comes from. It comes a little bit out of the tournament entries in the course of the month. And since I won an event here in March, I qualified for Sunday's event. Unfortunately, made it about halfway through the field of 140 players and then zipped over into a PLO game and made some money there. What have you been up to in Vegas? I know last week when we talked to you, you were about to race off to day two of the main event of the Venetian Deep Stack Tournament. How'd that turn out?
Well, not well. I was very short stack, as I told you. I couldn't afford to miss any of the hands. Got in there, got it in basically a race, and lost it. So, you know, I outlasted again about 80-plus percent of the field, but doesn't make any difference.
Yep.
Went over to Caesars. I played their main event. I did not last very long there. I made the mistake of hitting a top set on the flop. So,
what were you thinking?
Anyhow. But a person caught a gut shot on, and anyhow, I was out of the tournament, so that ended that.
I'm curious.
They had another one.
Go ahead.
No, don't worry about it. Stations are having a series of four different events here where they're guaranteeing $200,000 for each of the four. I went down and played in the first one at Green Valley, and they, again, only had 170 people show up. They actually had to dump some money in of their own to fill out the field. That one I also made day two with, I think, 47 people made it day two. But, again, I was fairly short-stacked and got it in there with a king-queen on the button and a small blind called me with ace-jack, and it just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep beating 80% of the field. Does that count for anything?
No, unfortunately, you got to beat 90% of the field in most of these tournaments to make any kind of money, and you got to beat 99% of the field or 100% of the field in order to make the real money here. But I do want to ask you, because
yep.
You said a small turnout for stations, and I saw that the main event of the World Series of Poker Circuit event at Caesars, they had 496 in that, and I know the WPT hit it big with their first ever foray into Florida at the Seminole Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. But it sounds to me like attendance has been down at some of the things going on in Las Vegas. Why is that?
Well, not for sure why, but you're absolutely right. The deep stack at the Venetian was down considerably from what they've had before. A lot of the other events at Caesars were down. I just read, I did not go to Chester, Pennsylvania, but their first event, the one that Hammond had like 14 or 1,500 in, the one that we had 850 in St. Louis, they had 244. And then less than 200 in events 2 and 3. So the numbers are dropping substantially, and honestly, I'm not for sure why.
I have a theory.
Definitely less number, okay?
I think there are too many tournaments going on at the same time. I mean, look at what we just talked about. All of that is since we did our last show 1 week ago. And that's not even all the tournaments going on. You've got small tournaments going on all over the country. You know, the Heartland Poker Tour is still out there. You've got various card rooms in various states that are having theirs. Commerce just started up their California State Poker Championship. These things are going on all the time. And I think that is diminishing the numbers in some of the markets, particularly in some of the newer markets. That, you know, the one in Chester, the circuit event there, that's the first time they ever did it there. And there's so many other things going on between Atlantic City and Foxwoods and other things in that area that I'm not surprised that numbers were down. Here in St. Louis, we drew huge because it's 5 hours to any place else where you can play poker.
But again, even in St. Louis, the Hollywood Casino had an event going on. The NAPT had one going on from Mohegan Sun. So there's still an awful lot of people playing poker. I wonder if because of Black Friday and because of some of the ramifications there, if maybe we haven't reached a saturation point, and maybe some of these tournaments are going to have to start rethinking their length and their different buy-ins and their different events, and we might start seeing them shut down instead of running 12 or 14 events, they're running 6 and 7 events.
By
I don't
way,
know. We'll see what happens.
Speaking of the California State Poker Championships, that's a Matt Savage thing at Commerce because he runs their events there. Listen to this event they're having this Sunday. $120 buy-in, all-in or fold, tournament.
Yeah.
you start with 3,000 in chips. The blinds go up every 20 minutes. First place gets 10K. There's 25K guaranteed in the prize pool. So that means, you know, at least 250 players, because $100 out of the 120 will go into the prize pool.
Yep.
Every hand, you're all in or you fold.
Yep. Poker at its truest, right? Game of skill.
Well, what I'm thinking about is you start with 3,000 in chips. The blinds probably start, you know, he's probably not starting at a 25, 50. Maybe he's starting at a 100, 200. But what are you going to put your tournament life on the line with for your $3,000 starting stack in those early rounds to win 300 in chips?
Well, again, two things are going to come into play here. Your position and how well you can read some of the other players and how tight they are.
Yep.
Because if you can identify the people quickly that are going to only be shoving it in there with the premium hands, you can take advantage of that. And if you can play your position strong, too, you know, somebody shoving under the gun here is probably going to have a hand.
Right.
You're right. You're trying to pick up 300 in chips or whatever the heck it happens to be.
And in late position, when somebody shoves, who's going to call that? I mean, unless you got queens, kings, or aces, you know.
And talk about the ability to use a squeeze play.
Well, this is the ultimate squeeze play because you can't three bet.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. This is a heck of a squeeze play. You know, somebody, what do you do? There is none.
There's no such thing as limping. You're either putting it in or you're not.
There you go.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Jennifer Harmon, the two-time bracelet winner. We've got lots of things to cover with her. First, let me give a plug for this casino that I'm sitting in right now, Harrah's St. Louis, where the pot limit action has been going most nights of the week. It's been really, really great here to see new players coming and sitting down. And I'm not just saying that as a cash game player who wants new fish in the game, but also it means that new people are coming and sitting down who may have been online players or who are trying to learn the game. Sometimes when you're learning a poker game, you just got to sit down, put your cash on the table, and consider that the tuition for your poker education. And in many cases, we're seeing exactly that. We're getting two tables a night on many of the weekend nights. Sometimes we get it up to three on Fridays and Saturdays. And if you haven't played PLO and you're in the St. Louis area, come out to Harrah's and give it a shot. Of course, if you're still a tournament player, Harrah's has more than a dozen tournaments every week, including four opportunities in the month of May for you to put down $200 and play the double shootout format and maybe walk away with a seat to the main event of the World Series of Poker. For details on all the tournaments and all the rest, go to harrahs.com/STLpoker. That's harrahs.com/STLpoker. We'll be back with more of the Final Table in a moment with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And you can always subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or listen to them directly on thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris, sitting at the feature table of Harrah's St. Louis. We talk often on this show about the new generation of poker players, kids who started playing it when they were 20, 19, 18, 17, 16, 15 years old. Our guest today started playing poker when she was 8 years old. Since then, she has become one of the top high-stakes cash game players in the world, a regular in what used to be the high-stakes games at Bobby's Room. She also has two World Series of Poker bracelets to her name. In the last year, she made the final table of three WSOP events, the 7-card stud High-Low 8 or Better Championship and a 7-card stud Raz Tourney, and also the $1 million Tournament of Champions. And this year, just about 6 weeks ago, she made another final table at the Atlantis All-In main event. Not only that, she holds the record on this show for our most downloaded podcast ever. So we're very happy to welcome Jennifer Harmon back to the Final Table. Hi, Jen. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you?
Good. I also want to get the plug in for the big charity event you've got coming up in a couple of weeks. It's called the Throwdown at the Peppermill in Reno. And let's start by plugging that, and then we'll talk about some issues.
Sounds good. May 21st, we're holding a charity event for the NSPCA, which is for the animals. It's a no-kill animal shelter, and the Throwdown means that everybody's bringing teams, so there's going to be teams of 10 people all rooting for each other to win it. It's a lot of fun, and it really helps the animals. And this year, I think we're expecting between, I don't know, maybe 600 and 800 players. So it's going to be a great event and a lot of fun.
And, Dennis, you're going to be there, right?
Absolutely. Talked a couple of months ago about it, got invited to it. I'm tickled to death to run up there. It's a good cause, and Jennifer has one of the exemplary reputations in poker. If she backs something, then it's probably a very worthy cause. That's all there is to it.
I have to thank you, Dennis, for supporting it. It's great you're coming out.
It should be fun. I'm actually looking forward to seeing the pepper mill up there. From what I hear, they've made a major renovations, sunk a couple hundred million dollars into it, and it's really an awesome place now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. So so we're in the same boat there. I heard it's going to be beautiful.
All right. Okay. Now, before we move on to other things, Jen, I do want to say one disclaimer here, which is that we're not going to be talking today about the online poker shutdown, because both Dennis and Jennifer, who were sponsored by PokerStars and Full Tilt Poker, respectively, have been asked by those sites to not make any public comments about the situation above and beyond those that we talked about on the show last week. So we're going to leave that aside. But I do have something that's kind of related to that to start with, Jen, and that is a lot of the people who were playing online now have no place to go in America other than to try to grind it out in live cash games or live tournaments around the country. What advice can you give these as a person who has sat down in so many live poker games in your career?
Well, you know, I feel that a lot of the online players are already dabbling in live tournaments and some cash games. So, you know, I've had experience of playing with many online poker players in Bobby's room, so they're starting to dabble in. I just think it's a matter of experience. Just get in there and start playing and log in some hours, and it's a little different style than online, but I think with more hours logged in at a poker table live, I think that they'll pick it up pretty quickly. And the same with tournaments. I mean, you know, playing live now is more about tells and being able to read your opponents, and I think that plays a bigger factor in it. So to pay attention and really, really follow your opponent's behavior, so your decisions will be easier.
Yeah, I agree with that. Most of the players that were successful online will end up being successful in live also. They may have a learning curve to go through, and you may want to play them this week rather than 2 or 3 months down the road. But I think they'll adjust fairly easily. I've got a question. I'm wondering, because of the number of hands you get online versus the number of hands you do in a live tournament or a live game, and the fact that a lot of these guys are specialists in a six max or in a heads up or something like that, or in sit and goes, are we going to see a change in some of the poker rooms and some of the games maybe that they're putting out there for the players now?
You know, that I don't know. You know, they do a lot of hands. I feel that, you know, a lot of those players are going to be quite bored. They maybe have to bring their iPads to play some video games in between. But you know, there might be a difference, but I don't see how to speed up live poker unless you actually put in computers. But then, I haven't really heard anything about that. So
yeah, they tried the automated tables a few years ago at some places around the country, and I think the Excalibur in Vegas was doing it for some low limit PLO, but it never really took off, and I haven't heard of it being a success anywhere except maybe on cruise ships. But let's go back to the idea of, you know, playing more live tournaments. Here's a quote from Brandon Adams in an interview with Card Player. He said, "The model of professional live tournament poker is drawing dead. When one considers rake and taxes and living expenses and variance, it was a worthwhile gamble for some people only because of the potential upside of sponsorship dollars." Which brings me to my question, which is it possible in this poker economy now to be a touring pro without a sponsorship? And that's for both of you. Jennifer first.
I think it's very difficult because there are so many expenses involved with traveling and then the buy-ins. You really have to, you know, cash high in some of these tournaments in order to just break even. It's difficult to do the tournament scene. It's actually, there are people throughout the years who've made money through it, without sponsorships, so it can be done, not impossible. It can be done. It's just, I feel you have to be very good. You have to, and take it very seriously, because traveling expenses and the buy-ins and the juice, everything, it really eats up your pocketbook.
I couldn't agree
That's
more.
That's my
I
opinion.
Think, I'm sorry, go ahead. But no, I couldn't agree more. I think people are going to be a little more careful and plan a little bit better, do a little bit better bankroll management. When they go to play in some 5K or 10K event, they may have to plan around it to be there a few days earlier, to try and satellite in, to try and play some of the $300,000, $500,000, whatever they are, tournaments ahead of time, so that they can cover their costs through that. It's going to be very... I don't think people realize how expensive it can be. If you're touring around through the U.S. and other places, and you're doing nothing but this, and you're trying to catch all of the 10K events that are scattered around the country, I don't know what the figure is, but I'll bet you could spend anywhere from a half to three-quarters of $1 million in a year between expenses and buy-ins and everything else. And that's just, you've got to run deep a couple of times to justify that kind of expense.
Not just deep. You're going to have to win a few events if you're going to have that kind of a nut to pay.
Yeah. So I've never sat down and actually done the math for it, but I would bet you could easily spend over half $1 million in a year trying to do nothing but play in these major events.
Now, we do know pros like Doug Carley, who, nobody knows that name outside of the small limit tournament world. But here's a guy who goes out and he plays in the 300s and the 500s and sometimes in the $1,500 tournaments on the circuit throughout the Midwest and the southeast of the United States. And you know, he's become a millionaire after giving up his career as a stockbroker, as a middle-aged guy who travels with his wife, and they keep expenses low. And he's put up enough cashes and victories and got himself a couple of circuit rings as well to turn that into a career. And, of course, on the pro level, higher than that, you've got, you know, a Kathy Liebert, who's never had big sponsorship dollars coming in, and she's been able to rake it in through the years. But are those the exceptions to the rule, Jennifer?
I think it can be done. I think it's very difficult to do. You know, you do have a few people, you know, my hat goes off to Kathy because she's an unbelievable tournament player, and she, you know, she's very serious about it. So my hat does go off to her, but it's a very, very difficult thing. And, you know, it's a difficult life because you're always on the road.
Yep. All right, well, speaking of tournaments, we've talked in the first segment of the show about the Federated Poker League that Annie Duke is the commissioner of and that Jeffrey Pollack is running, and they came out today with their list of criteria and their first 218 invitees, and your name is on the list. You've qualified for a card to play in this league for a couple of years. Has Annie called you? And if she has, are you accepting the invitation?
I've talked to Jeffrey. I expect a call from Annie sometime this week, maybe even today. I'm going to listen to them and see what they have to say. It sounds like a great idea. You know, I support, you know, anything that can better poker and improve poker. So I'm going to listen to what they have to say. But as of right now, I'm in very much support of it.
But I wonder, there's 217, actually, because Annie can't play in her own tournament. They're qualified now, and you're going to get a handful more through the series and over the next couple, 3 months as people do it. But I'm just wondering how many of those are actually going to play and just how large this field's going to be. Are 50% of these pros going to play, or 80% of them going to play? Do you have any feel for that?
I haven't really heard a lot about it, so there's not a lot of buzz going on at this point in time. Maybe I'm just out of the loop. But, you know, I would say 50% would probably play in it, maybe more.
So you're talking about a field of maybe 110 to 150, somewhere in there, all of whom are going to have to cough up $20,000, again, in an era where sponsorship dollars have suddenly become scarce. It'll be interesting to see if that actually plays out. And whether they get a TV deal, and you know, like you said, we don't know all the details yet, so there's a lot we're waiting to hear. The other thing I wrote down that I knew I had to ask you about today was that you tweeted, I don't know if it was a month or two ago, about the lack of action in Las Vegas and that you were considering leaving Las Vegas. Are you thinking about moving back to your hometown of Reno?
Well, we actually bought a house in Reno. So, yeah, that's a viable option. Actually, we've decided to split our time between Reno and Vegas for the next year and a half and make a decision after that, because then our kids actually start school and we have to stay at least somewhere. So if I'm in Vegas, then I don't have to commute to work, but if we end up in Reno, then I will definitely have to commute to work. So either way, you know, it doesn't really matter to me. I'll commute or I'll stay in Vegas. I love Reno and Vegas. I just feel that Reno's a little bit better for my kids because they're definitely around family, and that's so important.
Yep.
For their upbringing.
We'll see. Are there games for you to play in Reno?
Not at the moment, but, you know, anybody wants to come out when I'm in Reno and play with me, I'm here.
Hi, I'm one of the best high-stakes cash game players in the world. Why don't you come and sit down with me?
I'm a lot of fun.
Yes, you are.
you're one of the top ones. There's no doubt about it, especially in any kind of a limit game. Plus, your scope of games, you're playing Raz or whatever. If it has to do with cards, you should be a top contender. That's all there is to it.
Thank you.
Well, I've been following the tournaments around here and the sign-ins and the entries and whether it's changed any since Black Friday. Have you noticed any difference in the cash games? Harder to get one, easier to get one, the levels up, down, any kind of a change at all yet that's noticeable?
Well, I think a lot of people are still in shock of what's happening and what's happened. The Aria has a 4-800 game every day. And I heard that that they had a 1,500 and 3,000 game also there in the last couple of days. I believe I've heard rumors about other card rooms, you know, filling up a little bit more than they were. Oh, yeah, I'm actually in Reno right now, but I'm probably going back to Vegas on Friday, so, you know, I'll be able to feel out the situation more. I'll be there for about 3 months minus May 21st for my event.
Yeah, I bet that 1,500, 3,000 game made your mouth water.
Well, the game didn't sound that great. You know, Daniel, David Oppenheim is a great player, and Johnny Chan is a great player. There weren't a lot of fish circling the game. It was mostly sharks playing in the game.
Is the Bobby's Room game dead?
There hasn't been a game there for a while. I expect it to pick up during the WPT event at the Bellagio this month.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think Bobby's Room is dead by all means. It's too beautiful of a room to be dead. I think that, you know, that between Ari and Bellagio, there'll be plenty of action. But myself, I love Bobby's Room, and I like the Aria Room, too. It's nice there.
I want to go back to a question I asked you earlier about people moving from online to playing cash games. I've become more of a PLO player in the last year, and fortunately here in St. Louis we get PLO going almost every night of the week. We also are trying to get more people to play more kinds of mixed games, although we don't play anywhere near at the level that you play at in Las Vegas. We're at least trying to explore expanding out into mixed games, but the vast majority of people are really just no-limit hold'em players. Maybe they just discovered it during the poker boom since 2003, or that's what they're playing in their home tournaments, in their basements, and whatever with their friends, or when they're coming to play in live rooms like this. For those people, what would you advise be the next step they take in their poker education when it comes to learning other games?
Well, I believe in order to learn other games, you have to think of each game separately and take your poker skills from No Limit Hold'em, your reading abilities, and use it towards other games. But, again, it takes hours logged in at a poker table to learn different games. It takes experience. You know, I would say a friend of mine, Abe Mosseri, basically said it takes about 5 years to learn all the mixed games. So, you know, that's a lot of table experience. And, mm-hmm. you know, you take your skills from each game and you apply it to the next game, knowing that they're totally different games. But you use your reading abilities and everything you've gathered in your subconscious as a poker player to move forward into learning different games.
Is there one game that you think is the next logical leap after No Limit Hold'em? Should people try Limit Hold'em games? Should they move into Omaha?
Well, Limit Hold'em is very different from No Limit Hold'em, but it is a Hold'em game. But they're very different games. I'm not sure if Limit Hold'em, you know, if they're used to a No Limit situation, then a PLO would probably be the next step. But after PLO, probably a Limit Hold'em and an Omaha 8 or better. And then, you know, move on to the stud games.
Should point out
the triple draw games.
Yeah, I should point out that Jennifer wrote the Limit Hold'em section of Doyle Brunson's Super System 2. And we got a question from a listener via Twitter for you about that. FatCat5000 wants to know why Limit Poker isn't more popular and why don't they put it on television?
Well, I feel that they've tried Limit Hold'em on television and that they've assessed that the public gets bored with the game because nobody's really putting their whole stack at risk, so it's not as exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So they've tried it, but, you know, I also feel they haven't given it a chance because, you know, Limit Hold'em, you're always in action. It's a different game, but it's still interesting and fun to watch. So, you know, I don't know. But why there aren't more Limit Hold'em games, I think, you know, No Limit Hold'em was on TV first, and it kind of took over the market. And you know, people will eventually, I feel, get kind of bored with No Limit Hold'em and move on to different games. And it might actually be Limit Hold'em.
Hmm. Well, they're trying in all sorts of new things. We've had the Dream Team concept, and we've had Tag Team Poker. And Paul just mentioned one that Matt Savage is bringing out where it's an all-or-fold type of concept for a tournament. Have you played any of these, that have tweaked your interest that sound good?
I played in the doubles tournament, which was a lot of fun.
Who did you get matched with, just out of curiosity?
Right, the one that was
Golden Nugget?
Yes, that one. It was fun. It was fun, you know, you get to get into your teammate's head, and you also get into your opponent's head. It was kind of fun. And you really need to keep your poker face when a guy just raised most of your stack with 9-3 offsuit. It's hard not to look at the cards and start laughing. But Gavin Smith actually pulled a couple of those. But it was actually a lot of fun, and it was interesting. You know, that would be great if they, you know, if that caught on.
I love that idea because of the different personalities you have and the potential for them being matched up. You know, of course, some people conflict, you know, but can you imagine a Phil Gordon and a Durr together with their playing styles?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Something that could be hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I agree. It makes great entertainment, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think you and Gavin is a pretty good team in that way because your styles aren't that close together. Speaking of Gavin, it reminds me, when we talked to him last summer, it was just before his new baby was born, and I asked him, would he raise a child to become a poker professional? Would he want his child to go on and be a poker pro? And since you've got twin boys of your own, I guess I can ask you the same question. Do you want them to grow up to do what mommy does?
Well, they already do. I'm kidding. You know, if they really wanted to do it, I would give them my blessing and try to help them the best way I could. But it's a very stressful life. It's not that easy, and it's a lot of hard work. And, you know, you have to be able to deal with the swings, and that's difficult. You know, there's sometimes I come home losing 200,000, 300,000, 400,000. And it's tough. You can be on top of the world one day and at the bottom, you know, in the center of the core of the earth on the other day. So it's a tough job emotionally.
Yep.
Because sometimes you don't get a paycheck. It's a tough job, and you have to be strong enough to be able to withstand that and think of it as a job. And you put your hours in, and that's what, you know, that's how you're making money. And yep. It's tough. And like I said, if they really wanted to do it, I'd give them my blessing, but I would rather have them do something else.
Gavin said pretty much the same thing. He said he wouldn't want his kid to do it because it's just too hard to be a poker pro. It sounds like a fun job, but in the long term, and we're not just talking about a year or two, but in the long term as a career, there's an enormous amount of stress there. It's one of the few jobs where you can go to work every day and lose your paycheck.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And we've all been there a number of times, unfortunately. So.
Yep.
Again, Paul talked earlier about the book that you helped write with Doyle on the limit section there. Do we have any other things coming from you in the form of a book or lectures or anything like that where you're giving us your education, your poker experience and expertise?
I don't feel I'm a very good teacher. You have to watch me play and learn from me that way, and I can explain things, but coming out of the top of my head, I don't think I'm very good at explaining. I did this because it felt good. That's not easy to explain or to teach. I'm actually, there's a book coming out called The Rush, written by Bob Shook, with a chapter of me in that book, but I'm not really teaching anything. It just basically, you know, covers, you know, what I do for a living and how I handle it and a little bit about my life. And that's Bob Shook wrote the book, and there's going to be, I think Roger Staubach is a chapter, and John Grisham is a chapter, and many other people.
Oh,
all right. That's called The Rush. Bob Shook. We'll find it and put a link to it on our website when we post the podcast of this show, Jennifer.
Are your plans? Yeah, it's going to be out maybe 6 months to a year.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll keep an eye out for it. What are your plans for the World Series this year?
I always come into the World Series positive, like I'm going to play a lot of tournaments, so that's my plan. And then I might get sidetracked playing cash games. I'm not sure, but basically my plan is work, work, work. Whatever it may be, cash games, tournaments, I'll be working 12 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I just got another question in via Twitter from a listener, Rond8124, asked, Jennifer, what was your turning point in becoming a professional? Was there one?
Well, I never had a turning point. I always felt I would get a job at some point or think about what I wanted to do, and I never did. So there was no turning point. It just, I was doing what I liked, making money, paying my bills, and just never bothered to go get a job.
Well, we appreciate you making time for us again here today. Last time we saw you was at the selection party for the NBC Heads Up, where you and I were trying to figure out what is in these sandwiches.
Yeah.
And then you went on the next day to beat Huxeed in round one, and then you lost to Eric Seidel in round two. By the way, with the year that Eric was having, that must have been a bad thing to see across the table.
It was. He's on fire and probably still is. So yeah, that was, you know, it was a hard bracket. But you know what? Eric went on to win it, so he did something good with my chips, and I was rooting for him the whole way because I really like Eric. I respect him as a player and also a person.
All right, we're going to let you go, but first let's get a plug in again for the Jennifer Harmon Celebrity Poker Tournament called the Throwdown. It's at the Peppermill in Reno on May 21st. We'll have a link to it on our website if you are interested in going. There's both team and individual play, right?
Yes, both. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And it's a big fundraiser for the Nevada SPCA. Jennifer has helped raise over $500,000 for that organization in the last few years. And the day after, I believe, is the beginning of the Nevada State Poker Championships. Dennis, are you planning on playing in that?
I talked to a couple of people. I'll probably stay up there and play that. It actually should be fairly well attended. Everybody coming up for Jennifer's event and then just having to stay over for another day and see. So, yeah, I'll probably stay up there for a couple of 3 days in Reno.
Well, Jen, we hope it's a big success for you, and we appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me, and good luck to both of you. And I'll be talking to you soon.
Okay, great.
Excellent.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Harmon, high-stakes cash pro, owner of two World Series of Poker bracelets, and really one of the most respected players in the game today. It's always a pleasure having her on.
I utmost respect for her game and the way she plays and the way she handles herself. And I'm telling you, if you're playing in a limit game, you don't want her across the table from you.
Yeah. But I like the way she said, you know, you have to learn from me by watching me play. So I think next time she gets into the 400, 800 game down at Aria, you should go pull up a chair behind her, sweat her, and ask if you can see her cards.
Okay. Well, that'd be a little gutsy of me to do that. But, you know, I sure the heck wouldn't mind doing it, that's for sure.
All right, before we go here today, we've got a few minutes, and I do want to talk a little bit about some of the fallout from the online poker shutdown. Jennifer told me ahead of time she didn't want to talk about it, and I know you're limited in what you can say, but it was on this show last week that we did have Steve Day from PokerStars announce that just before we went on the air with last Tuesday's show, people could go click on the cashier button and start getting their money out of their accounts in the United States. The rest of the world can still play on PokerStars, but in the U.S., ever since Black Friday, you can't. And in fact, if you do that, PokerStars insists that you take all of your funds out and convert your tournament dollars into cash and all the rest. And I know some people who did that last week and have already gotten the transfers into their bank accounts.
It's just been phenomenal. The turnaround time is actually reduced. PokerStars has been so diligent on this and so forthcoming that they are actually, people are getting their money back within 36 hours. It's just amazing. And it's also come to light, and I'm glad that now we can talk a little bit about that, that there was never any commingling of funds, that anything that was deposited within a PokerStars account went into its own separate account, was never touched by corporate PokerStars. That money was never, ever at risk and never will be. That's just the ethical way they run their site. So money is safe. It has been safe the whole time. You never have to worry about losing money on PokerStars, and we can now actually talk about that portion of it, which is awesome.
As for the other sites, Full Tilt Poker changed their FAQ on their site today. They were supposed to be making an announcement this week about exactly when their players could cash out of their accounts. They have now postponed that, and they say they'll have another update in the week beginning Monday, May 9th. So if you're a Full Tilt Poker player, they're still trying to figure out exactly how to do what PokerStars has done. And if you're a player on Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet, you know, I hate to be really negative about this, but those two sites, Absolute Poker and Ultimate Bet, are still allowing U.S. players to use their funds online. You can't transfer money in, but if you have money in your account, they're still letting people play online, and I would have to really... I was going to say, you can't get your money out. That's the problem. You can't get the money out, and you can't transfer it to somebody else now. I would really be hesitant to play on a site where they have my money, and they want me to keep playing to create more rake for them, but I can't get my money out, and possibility of getting it out in the foreseeable future.
Again, I'm not in any position to know anything about those sites or the situation. I have a number of friends that have money online there. I know a number of people that work over there, a number of people that were the pros representing them. I think it would be bad for anybody in the poker community if this isn't resolved successfully and getting all the players' money back. And I hope that, and I'm sure they're trying hard to figure out a way to get this done. But the one thing that really bothered me was when I saw a little bleep from Absolute Poker that said that we will accept deposits. We still allow people in the U.S. to do it. We're not for sure how or when we're going to be able to send money back. But then they put in another thing in there. They're limiting the maximum amount of money you can request out the off your account at $250.
So you can get money out of those sites, but they're limiting it.
If you can find a way to get it back and try and do it, that's fine, but they're actually limiting the amount of money that you can request from the site to $250. And I'm not for sure that you can even get that amount, but it just worried me when I saw that yes, we'll accept all deposits. We're still allowing U.S. players to play. But by the way, if you request money out of it, we're limiting it to only $250. It's the most we'll send you per week.
All right. We'll have more on that on next week's show. We'll also be joined next week by Dusty Schmidt, the author of a book called Don't Listen to Phil Hellmuth, and who also has some ideas on where poker should go now. He played with Dennis at the Live at the Bike a few weeks ago, and we'll talk about all that on next week's show. With Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas, I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis at Harris Poker Room. Thanks for listening to The Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on iTunes and TheChipLeader.com.